Hello, welcome to Greenlit, with me, the voice which belongs to Toby Earle. In each episode of Greenlit, a guest receives the thrilling news their life is to be made into a biopic, and we discuss how that story will be told. Will they star? Which moments won't make it into the adaptation? And will Dracula make an appearance? In this episode, writer Kirsty Swain will plot the course of this certain blockbuster. Swain wrote the critically acclaimed Channel 4 series Pure, BBC Three's Lady Baby, is currently adapting the CJ Skuse novel Sweet Pea for Sky Atlantic. She was named a BAFTA Breakthrough Brit, and she once folded a piece of paper 41 times, leaving her just one fold short of reaching the moon. Kirsty Swain, welcome to Greenlit.
Thank you. Well, like, is that like my Wikipedia entry about the paper? Because I think like someone's having a laugh.
Well, I mean, I read that there this morning after I'd added it to your Wikipedia.
Yeah.
And so I assumed it was true.
I'll take it, because that sounds like quite a feat. Like, I don't have any hobbies, so I'm thinking that sounds like the start of origami. I'm going to go for that.
Sort of interplanetary origami, which I think is a fairly niche hobby.
Yeah, I've been looking for one, because I mean, like, writing was my hobby and then now it's my job, so I don't have a hobby. I need something like that. I saw this guy on First Dates and he had really bad anxiety and he like just did origami. He was like, oh God, I'm panicking. And he made a swan and like gave it to someone.
What did he make a swan out of? Was it paper or was it another human?
A paper. He'd brought like his own little bits of paper to the restaurant.
Huh?
Which, yeah, this was like his thing. And then weirdly, the girl that he was meeting was into origami too. And they just kept making swans. When conversation dried up because he couldn't think of anything else to say, they were like, here's a swan, here's a, I don't know, what else do you make?
Yeah. So are you saying that by the end of the date, they had so little conversation, the table was just littered with origami animals?
Yeah, exactly. And then I bet the waiter just kind of like, when they left, just swept in the bin. I feel like I've got the beginnings of this origami thing happening, because every time it's Christmas, the only thing I have to offer is a fan napkin. Like, my sister does all the cooking and my mum helps. And like, I am just like, right, I'll do the napkins. And it's this thing I learned when I worked in a golf club at the age of 16. And I'm still pulling it out now.
Before we get into the film, is it pronounced biopic or biopic?
I always wonder this. And I think I say biopic because it feels natural. Then I'm like, but then I think about it afterwards. I'm like, no, biopic, because it's a biography. Yeah, I'm so confused. And I think like my mum always mispronounces words. So she says like balcony and balcony and Asia for Asia. And I think
Asia?
I don't know why. She's from Scotland. I think I've inherited her mispronunciation of words, because sometimes if, like, I don't know what my agent's second name is. I don't know how to pronounce it. I've never said it out loud. So I always just try and, you know, when you like read words and you just like, you don't have to say them out loud, and then suddenly you have to say them out loud and you're like, shit. One way or the other. It's fine for a biopic. No one's going to judge you, but people are going to judge me if I'm like, if I say my agent's name wrong. I've been with her for like 5 years, more than 5 years.
So you've had these kind of meetings because you've worked on shows like Run, which is an HBO.
Yeah.
Where would you have a meeting with the executives? Where would you have it? Would you have it in their office? Would you have it in a restaurant? Would you go to the studio? Would you insist on being in like one of the lots, like one of the stages? Where would you want to meet the executives to have this meeting about your biopic?
I think we'd probably have to do it on Zoom, wouldn't we? Like, that's the way it's going. I don't know whether it makes it worse or like more stressful or less stressful, because I feel like at least if I'm going to a meeting, I'm always really like so early, ridiculously early. And I have I have to do like ever decreasing circles around my destination point. I will arrive on time. And when I have to do that in my house, I'm just like pacing around, doing like putting a wash on, trying to work out what is the peak moment to make a cup of tea so that it will be at its peak hotness while I go on the Zoom. Like, there's a load of washing in the washing machine at the moment. And I was like, I can put it up before. And I was like, no, I can't. And now it's in there and the door's open and I know I'm going to forget about it. And I'm going to have smelly washing because of this Zoom call.
Well, Can I firstly apologize to your washing for potentially inheriting the odor of the washing machine? I apologize for that. I'm very much with you. I don't like putting the washing in the machine unless it's ready to go, unless it's going to do it. I don't want it hanging around there. But can you please just talk a little bit about you being super early for meetings and having to actually plan your route so that you do laps that slowly bring you into your destination?
I mean, don't make me sound weird, but
I'm trying not to.
Well, what I do is I go to the place first. I'm like, oh, look at my watch. I'm half an hour early. I just always think bad things are going to happen on the way there. Like there's going to be like a delayed train or something. I can't rely on
strike.
Other people. Yeah, exactly. So I get to the destination, then I have to go and do a walk, and then like ever decreasing.
Have you ever been late for a meeting you were early for because you had to go on a lap or had to do these laps?
Yeah, because then I get lost. I've got a terrible sense of direction. And then
this is amazing.
Most of the time I'm still really early, but it's like, then I'm like, oh, I'll just go into H&M and buy a coat. And then there's a queue and I'm like, no, but this coat might not be there. I was nearly late for a meeting because I did go into H&M and buy a coat because I saw an advert for it on my walk, on my ever decreasing walk. And I was like, I have to have that coat. And then like, there's H&M. Yeah. And it was at the BBC and it was quite important. And do you know what? I wasn't late, but in my head, by my standards, I was late. I was on time. I didn't have to like wait in the foyer like a weirdo for like half an hour.
Hang on, you got the coat, right? I love the fact that you were somehow like geographically ad targeted.
Yes.
So that you were beckoned into H&M to buy that coat. That's an incredible testament to the power of targeted advertising.
I'm an easy target. I'm an advertiser's dream. I don't know how they do it. Like it's not even online. I just see an advert. I'm like, no, I really need that in my life. And then I just get really fixated on it and I have to buy it. That's why I've got 27 grey t-shirts, because I read this thing in a magazine, a women's magazine, which I blame for a lot of my problems, that like every woman should have, or everyone should have a grey t-shirt, like a really good grey t-shirt in their wardrobe. And I think I read that in 2011. I'm still trying to find the perfect grey t-shirt. And every time I see an advert for a grey t-shirt, I'm like, that's it. That's got to be it. Like, that is the grey t-shirt that is going to solve my life and give me this like perfect capsule wardrobe. But going back to the coat, I saw it on the tube on the way up. You know those escalators where we have the adverts there? I saw it and I was like, oh my God, coat of dreams. Went was nearly late, but then I wore the coat to the meeting. And I probably still have a table in it though, let's face it.
See, I was going to ask, did you walk in with your shopping bag? Like, and I've just been shopping.
No, I didn't think that was a good look, but the coat was a good look because it was a really nice coat.
What sort of coat was it, may I ask?
Oh, it was grey and it was...
Oh my God, grey, for goodness sake.
I know, it was grey, oversized, big collar, so you could like pop it up at the back.
Yeah.
And it was like calf length.
Wow.
If it was online, it would be called a blogger's favourite. I know what that means.
Don't change.
No, it's too much effort. I mean, you have to remember that you've changed. And
that's always the proper change. It's remembering you've changed, isn't it? Like the really sincere change. You have to remember, I forgot. I'm not that person now.
Yeah, I used to do this all the time when I was probably before I was 30. I was like, right, I'm going to be different now. I'm going to be so different. I'm going to, you know, when you're at school and you go away for the holidays and it's quite easy to change because no one's seen you for like 8 weeks or however long. Like I always used to think I was going to have this amazing transformation over the holidays and be this different person, be this confident, cool person. But I went back to school and I was still the same dork.
Do you know what, Kirsty? I've not heard anyone call themselves a dork in such a long time.
I saw that written down the other day and I'm like, I'm going to bring that back.
So you're having a Zoom meeting with these executives. I love the idea that even sort of like preparing for a Zoom meeting, you're pacing around. Mm. What would you have then? If you're having a Zoom meeting with these executives, what is your standard array of support materials with you during said meetings? What liquids, foodstuffs, emotional support, animals, anything? Like what do you have around you?
Normally I'd have my dog in the background, so she's like a nice talking point, like, oh, don't be worried if you see an animal in the background, it's my dog. And everyone loves a dog, so they're like, oh, what kind of dog is it? Yeah, see, I feel like I'm playing a psychological game. And so I've got my dog, support animal.
Is the dog in on it? Is the dog in on it as well? Does the dog know how to act up to like be
cute? She does not know what's happening. She'll sometimes come and like just jump up in the middle of it. But almost it is like it's planned, because then they're like, oh. And if they've asked me a really tricky question about like what the ending is, and I don't know. I'm like, oh, look at my dog instead. It's quite a good distraction tactic. So I've got my dog there, a huge cup of tea, some water, my glasses, which like, I don't know if I really need them, but I'm like, sometimes I'll put them on if I'm like wanting to look more intelligent.
Does that work still?
No. Well, that's why I'm wearing glasses, because I wanted them so much. I think I lied in my optician appointment. Glasses. And then I went to the optician a few months ago and she was like, I don't think you really need glasses. And I was like, I do. I wear glasses.
Who said that?
The optician. But she still gave me a prescription. I felt like a some sort of really pathetic drug addict, but for like eyes.
Your prescription must have the thickness of a bubble.
It's like so it might. Yeah.
I mean, literally rainwater must be able to pass through it.
They're like, I could buy stronger glasses in Tiger. Could you even get me, or Aldi? Can't you get reading glasses in there? But it does work. It does make you look more intelligent.
Well, it's all worked, Kirsty. Yes. Congratulations on being greenlit.
Thank you.
But the first question is, and it's a big one, what's the film called, Kirsty Swain? What is the Kirsty Swain biopic called?
It's called Don't Make This Weird, because I feel like that's what I'm always trying to do, but in doing so I make it weird. Like, it's a combination of being like a massive worrier, overthinking things, and also being a little bit dramatic, and like a bit of social awkwardness thrown in there as well. So all like, just I feel like a Mr. Bean sometimes, like Mr. Bean type situation, where I just try and overcorrect things and have the opposite effect.
And that's because of social anxiety?
A little bit, yeah. I think a lot of things can be blamed on social anxiety. And also, sometimes I think I've made myself this way, because when I was at school, I felt a bit weird, and I probably was. But I was also a massive fan of Ally McBeal. I was obsessed with Ally McBeal. Like, I wanted to be her.
Oh, no.
And there was like a quote that was in that show that was like, remember when I'm in the room, you're not the strangest person in the room. Or like, when you're with me, you're not the strangest person in the room. And that really like, it really resonated with me. And I don't think that's a really healthy attitude to have to yourself. But I feel like that's why my writing became like a bit of therapy for how weird I felt, because I used to write weird stories and people liked them, and they still do, I think. So it's actually turned all right, because I've noticed my flaw, I've harnessed it and seen it as a superpower.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, can I wait, so why did you feel weird when you were younger?
Oh, I was obsessed with badminton.
Oh my god.
I know.
I have never, ever, ever heard anyone say that.
Couldn't get badminton, like with shuttlecocks, not a horse one.
Yeah.
Like the horse show. I used to play it all the time. This sounds like it's a euphemism for heroin. It's not. It was literally badminton. And when I was in primary school, when you got to a certain age, these children used to go off to the sports hall, and I was like, where are they going? Like, what's happening? And it was all like this secretive thing. And I found out they were going to this thing called badminton. So it had this really mythical presence in my life. And then I got to go, and I was really good at it. And I played it all the time. I played it like 5 times a week. And I ended up being like number six in Scotland. Like, that's how obsessed I was. But under 16, sixth in Scotland.
So
maybe under 18. I was really into it. I was playing for the Scotland squad. It was a big part of my life, but it made me really competitive.
Wow. Mm. That is amazing. Do you know what? That's so, because that's really impressive, because that is literally you harnessed an obsession and turned it into a talent.
Yes. And I feel like I was weird, because I was doing that when all my friends were getting off their tits on cider in the park, and snogging each other and having conversations. And I was just like, Not like it's not as cool as tennis. You don't do this big like guttural roars when you hit a shuttlecock. It's a bit more, more wrist action. So that was one reason. Also, I was really shy and starey. Like, so I think that I just felt weird. I think other people thought I was weird. But also, I feel like people didn't notice me because I was so quiet. I didn't speak. And it just, yeah, I know. Poor little 8-year-old me. That's just a bit dramatic as well.
Badminton, though, is like, the shuttlecock. That like travels at some of the fastest speeds in sport, doesn't it?
Yeah. I think it really hurts if you get hit in the face.
Does it?
And you get a red mark. from the cork as well.
Did you used to aim for people? Were you just taking out your
Pamela Timmins? Yeah, bitch.
Pamela Timmins. What happened to Pamela?
She was I had quite a lot. I have a lot of secret nemesis. Is it nemesi? Nemesis. I can still remember. I was beating her, and she created this problem where she was like, the court, there's wet stuff on the court. I'm like, yeah, because you're pissing yourself because you're scared I'm gonna beat you. And she used to like get her towel and like try and mop up all the like the imaginary liquid from the court just so that she could like stall.
I am in awe. I absolute awe that you remember that you've got secret nemesis from how old were you there? How old was that?
Maybe 14, 15.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible. How many secret nemeses do you think you have?
Well, quite a lot. A lot of them don't know that they're secret.
You don't want them to have the pleasure of knowing. That's the thing I think about nemesis. They get too much pleasure knowing.
Yeah, that's it. You just want to like keep it to yourself. Think about how much you hate them. And yeah, actually, you're the only one that's suffering. They're not. it's not helpful.
But don't make this weird. Yeah. And you say this sort of reflects upon your writing in part of your life. How do you think that sort of outlook has informed your professional writing? Because I don't want to particularly pick on Pure, but obviously there was a lot of anxiety and awkwardness in Pure. Mm-hmm.
Writing has become my therapy. So like if things happen to me in real life that make me want to like crawl out of my skin with cringe, I'm like, it makes me feel better if I can write it into something. For example, I don't know why this thing always jumps into my mind when I think about cringing, but it happened maybe in the last few years before the pandemic. I met like a writer to like talk about maybe like doing a show with them. And then at the end of the meeting, I don't know how we got talking about it, but we were talking about how people end meetings and like, do we end with a handshake or what happens now? Like a hug, like we don't know each other that well. Mm. And then we were like, I was like, oh, chest bump. And he was like, I know. He was like, go on, man. And I did it. And it in the street. And it was really, and I keep I can feel like my breasts hurting because of that. And then I like write it and stuff and it's okay because it happened to someone else. Yeah, just like writing stuff that's really cringe. Like, oh, anytime I try and chat a man up, or when I did chat men up, I don't chat men up. I'm not very good at it because it's just so socially awkward. And then if I write about it, then it's okay. And it's happening to someone else.
Have you ever chest bumped anyone before or since?
No, never going to do it again. I don't know why I did it. It's horrible. Never chest bump anyone. Like it actually hurts if you're a woman.
I can well imagine. And you're coming up against a sternum, right? You're coming up against just a breastplate of...
Yeah. And that's just me committing to that. I don't think he was expecting it.
Did he not expect it to go in so hard? Oh my God, that's amazing.
I don't think he expected me to chest bump him. I think we were just like, he was like, this is just a hypothetical conversation. And I was like, he's going to judge me if I don't do it. This is like what I mean, the overthinking. If I just like, we could have had a nice humorous conversation, but then I had to make it weird by actually doing it because I thought he was going to judge me if I didn't because he was a comedian.
So you felt like if you didn't rise to their sort of game,
because I don't know, I always just think comedians are really cool, but I've learned that they're not. I was one for a while and I'm not, but yeah, like there's just some sort of, I'm like, oh, they're the cool kids at school. And I just don't overthink that. I always think everyone's cooler than me, and then I go into a situation trying to be as cool as them, and then it's just not It's cool.
I mean, that is amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
I have flashbacks.
Is it one of those things that keeps you, like, you'll sit up at night?
Yes.
You do
remember them, and it makes me go, proper.
When you mentioned overthinking there, is that something which has plagued you since you can remember?
Yes. Like, even knowing I was going to do this, chat with you, I was like... Basically, I've come up with 7 different ideas from what the film of my life could be.
Wow.
And I might write one of them, but I was like, oh God, what am I going to go with? And I was like, well, I've just made this weird. It has to be this one.
It's such a strong title.
Yeah.
Don't Make This Weird is such a strong title, because it's something you could say to a friend, but it's also something you could say to a stranger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a good rule for life, like a good mantra that I say to myself on a daily basis, like, don't make this weird. Like, writing an email to someone should be quite an easy thing to do, but like, I have to write so many drafts of it, and then I'm like, how shall I end it? I've put too many justs in there. I have to delete all the justs, and then when I've sent it, I have to go and check that I haven't actually called them a or something, because I've overthought it, and I was like, oh, maybe I wrote that by accident, and yeah, just overthinking it then. I'm still overthinking it after I've sent it and it's happened.
I mean, how long does it take you to compose an email, do you think?
Oh, like, my just God. Yeah, like, sometimes it can take 3 hours. And I have to, like, put it in my drafts and then, like, leave it and then go back to it. Make sure, just a final check, just to make sure I haven't insulted their wife or their religion or something. Yeah.
I mean, this is the number of things you've mentioned here in terms of what could be put in the film. Mm. I mean, it's exciting. Because if the avenues of opportunity and accident and capers, it's wide open.
But it could have, like, this amazing through line of the badminton story. It could become Rocky for millennials.
Rocky for millennials. What an absolute killer pull, like, quote.
Oh, yeah. I'd love to write, like, a boxing film, but I don't like boxing. So maybe badminton. Like, pour my passion in there.
Could you write a film where they fight, but with badminton rackets?
Oh, yes. That could be, like, Pamela Timmins. That could be when badminton goes wrong. Off the court, hitting people with badminton rackets. That's funny and quite dark as well, because they hurt.
So it's Rocky for millennials, but with badminton.
Yeah.
Don't Make This Weird.
Yeah.
But what's the opening scene? What is the opening scene?
Oh, I feel like it's got to be me playing my first badminton match and being amazing at it.
Yes.
Well, do you know what? I think my first experience of holding a racket was when they did, like, a squash taster session at my school. And then I was like, oh, something feels right about this, but not quite right. And then badminton. I feel like it's got to be like me playing badminton for the first time. That's it, isn't it? Like, as a child, like, the flashback scene cut to people noticing I've got a talent. And commenting on my muscular calves, which happened. That's quite creepy. I know.
What? Hang on. When did you have muscular calves? Well, I'm not saying you don't now, but when did you have them as a child?
I don't know how old. Maybe I was like 13. That's still a child, isn't it?
Yeah, still a child.
No, but I heard, I was playing badminton and I heard some people commenting on, like, my calves. I've had quite a few compliments about my calves, mostly from older men.
Are they like Jack Grealish calves, like Tour de France style calves?
Yeah, let's go for that. That sounds better than cankle.
What was it you said? Were you 8 years old when you first played badminton?
Yeah, I think it was about eight. Yeah, 8 or 9.
So I'm going to make this weird. You're whoever's playing you at 8, right? Is, like, obviously, you know, an 8-year-old child, but they've got incredibly massive calves. Like, they are, like, super muscular.
Yeah.
Like, Hulk style.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my God, these are really useful for badminton. I never really know what I could use them for.
And before that, they'd been this, like, personal shame in my life, my huge muscular calves. Actually, they were a weapon in disguise. I feel like this is a coming-of-age story. And yeah, it could be the next Rocky. Who knows?
I think, but it's working for me. And so it was an introductory lesson to squash when your love for badminton was ignited.
Well, I think it was, no, let's scrap. That's going on the cutting room floor, I think.
I think
it's got to be when I first played badminton in, like, this tiny hall where, like, the shuttle goes high. There were, like, these fluorescent strip lights on the top of the ceiling. Classic. And they, like, if you were really good, like I, you kept like hitting the shuttle and it gets stuck in the lights. So
oh.
I feel like my potential wasn't realized at that point, but I was like, there's something in this. I feel glee. I feel like smashing the shuttle. I think after being someone who couldn't really express themselves verbally, the violence, like the fast, quiet violence of badminton just like really kind of unleashed something in me.
The fast, quiet violence of badminton is such a lovely phrase.
Isn't it?
I've never like, thought of it like that.
There, I think that I should do commentary for the Olympics, even though I don't really know anything about badminton now, but I think that's what they need to like get it into the mainstream. It's not really a very cool sport, is it? Like I know I'm talking about how uncool I was, but like I never had like a headband or anything like that.
Oh.
I wish I had. I wore a fleece. That's worse.
Fleece. But whereabouts did you have your first badminton match? Where were you playing? Were you playing in Glasgow? Was it around Glasgow?
Eton Primary School Hall, which is like wooden floor. It was used for so many things like PE and the school dance, the school like school assemblies and badminton. This like tiny little village in the Scottish Borders where like there were 60 people at my school, I think, in primary school. It's tiny. So I was the best badminton player there, which wasn't hard.
Were you the only badminton player there?
No, there were a few people, and it gave me great pleasure in like smashing it at people because the bullies played it as well. So I was better than them, and that gave me like a little bit of power.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I do have self-worth.
Did the bullies, did they give you more respect once you started besting them at badminton, or did they make your life even more miserable because
probably
you started
worse.
Besting them at badminton?
Yeah. It was never cited as a reason, but I'm sure it was.
Those bullies, man, they just don't get it, do they? They just don't get when to just quit.
Where are they now? They're not playing badminton, and neither am I anymore. I realized how.
You should also mention, you know, that the fast, quiet violence of badminton is a great title for a film, like a particularly low budget one that could really do well at the Oscars. It's got that, the quiet violence of badminton.
Yeah. Oh, it does. Yeah. It's like, ooh, what's this about? What's the genre going to be?
You can have all those kind of lovely sound designs of the badminton, the shuttlecock swishing through the air.
I'm seeing the opening scene now. Just fluorescent light in camera.
Yes.
And then you tilt down. And as you tilt down, you like hear the whoosh, whoosh, whoosh.
Yes.
And then you see the badminton players.
Do you know what it could be? It could be like the Queen's Gambit of badminton. That kind of sensibility, the kind of quiet, you know, sense of isolation being within your head.
Mm.
You could kind of flip it, I suppose. And you could maybe have like, instead of this, like the quiet swishing, you could have like the sound of like a cruise missile as the badminton roars. You could make it incredibly loud and violent instead. I don't know, but I love the opening shot. This is a great opening shot. You know, you say tilting down from the ceiling and the fluorescent lights, dead flies on the top of the fluorescent lights, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Are we going horror tonally? Depends where we're going, but I feel like that's a good opening shot. The blinding lights.
This is great. So don't make this weird. We've got the opening scene. Who though? Is going to be cast in the lead. Now they do not have to have muscular calves.
Yeah.
Who would you want playing Kirsty Swain in Don't Make This Weird?
Right. My dream casting would be Kristen Wiig doing Scottish accent.
Whoa.
Yeah. I'm going to go big. But also, like, is she... And she should play every age. Like, she's got to play me aged 8 and age 13, to whenever I stopped playing badminton a few years ago.
Brilliant. Can Kristen Wiig do a Scottish accent?
Have I don't you ever know, heard? But I feel like it should be someone who can't do a Scottish accent.
Yeah. Why is that?
Just because of the, like, we want to invoke a feeling of cringe. I really want to get that across. So
right.
I feel like someone doing a terrible Scottish accent is going to do that. Yeah.
Just to add to the kind of awkwardness of it all.
That's a vibe we're going with. I think that would be good. Or I think if she's not available, I think it should be Calista Flockhart.
You just don't see Calista Flockhart these days, do you?
No. What was she in that thing called Brothers and Sisters?
Yes, of course.
That thing. She's too busy like just hanging out with Harrison Ford while he goes bike riding around Newcastle.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, that is a great life, isn't it? And actually, because he was in Glasgow filming the new Indiana Jones film, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Before I come on to Kristen Wiig, you mentioned Calista Flockhart. Have you ever, and sort of the influence it had on you when you were younger, have you ever watched Ally McBeal back as an adult human?
Oh, no, I think, because it would probably make me cringe. I hold this, like, dear place for it in my heart, because it was like comedy drama, the first kind of comedy drama that I'd seen where you could have like really sad moments and really goofy moments as well.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the vibe I go for sometimes. Yeah, maybe I should watch it back. But I also don't want to like be disappointed.
I don't think you can go back to it. I don't think it would stand up.
Because it was a different time, was it? And it was a different, like, women did things differently in shows, like the way women were portrayed. She's basically a manic pixie dream girl.
Yeah.
And that's not what I'm wanting to do with the stuff I write now. That's not what I'm aspiring to be, but apparently I was when I was a teenager.
And I even, you also, like,
had an accent.
And also, would you want to be haunted by a awful CGI baby?
No. See, things have moved on now, haven't they? A dancing baby. Like, I was so obsessed with it, I learned that dance. It was my screensaver on my computer, this weird dancing baby. And I had listened to Barry White far too much for someone of my age.
You learned the baby dance from Ally McBeal. That's incredible.
Yeah, I did it at school discos. Made it weird.
Was there any success at the school disco? Were there any suitors enraptured by said performance?
No. Oh my God, no, there weren't. I had so many overwhelming crushes on people. Then I was like, suddenly, it's this thing, I think this is the phenomenon called the ick factor, where like I almost like blew myself out, you know, like a wind, like blowing too hard. This is not the right analogy. I'm going to stop that right there. Like, just fancying someone so much that it was, like fancying someone so much that it just kind of like took it too far. Not in like a creepy way, but like, I just mean in my head. And then I was like, oh no, I don't. Like, when it veers from infatuation into disgust, I think there's like a fine, there's like a line, and I crossed it. But lots of unrequited loves, I feel like I had. Yeah, they just didn't get me.
Oh, bless.
Badminton. Yeah.
Well, they're going to get you now. Once they see, don't make this weird. So why Kristen Wiig? Why? What is it about Kristen Wiig that you think... you said about the accent, you wanted to do a terrible Scottish accent, which is funny to add to the awkwardness, but why Wiig?
I just love her. I feel like I want to be her friend. I just, and now I can't meet her professionally because I've said this out loud now. I don't know, I just think she's brilliant. If I don't send gifts often, but if I do send a gift, it's of Kristen Wiig. I feel like I relate to her. She does like a lot of expressions, facial expressions.
Yeah.
She's a gurner. I feel like I'm a gurner and I have a lot of facial expressions, like an elastic face, and she does them. And like, I just feel like her face captures more than words. And in a WhatsApp, I'm like, I don't know how to respond to that. So Kristen Wiig gif.
She's your go-to gif.
She's my go-to gif, yeah. And Bridesmaids is one of my favourite films. Yeah, she's brilliant. And I think she can do comedy and drama, and like tonally, that's what I want this film to be. I feel like there's real drama to be had in badminton, but also it's quite funny to watch. Especially if you're not very good at it, because that's one way to test if you really fancy someone, is to make them play badminton.
Is it?
If they just don't commit, like, it's very hard to look cool playing badminton. I think if they don't look cool and you still fancy them, then that's like, they're a keeper.
What an acid test.
Maybe like on there should be a dating badminton app, and this can come out in the marketing of this film.
Yes.
Like, just want to get it to the mainstream, you know?
Did you say that you liked Ally McBeal so much you put on an accent?
I think I kind of had developed like a transatlantic drawl at points when I was...
Uh-oh.
I know. Like, I just remember saying... Because in Ally McBeal, they didn't say what. They went, excuse me. And I remember like this boy that had disgusted me in school. And I was like, excuse me. Like, but I'd done it with like a bit of an accent, and he like parroted it back to me, and I felt like such a fool. Yeah, I just remember changing the shape of my vowels so it'd sound more like Ally McBeal. I don't know why I wanted to be her because she was a mess.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that you've managed to just not cling on to a memory of being embarrassed by the accent as well. It clearly it's not doesn't play on your mind at all. can you give me a little demonstration of that accent? Do you still have the ability to channel that transatlantic?
I think I was like, excuse me. Like, it's terrible. It's not even like, I don't even know what that is. I just remember, I can't even do it anymore. I think I've like blocked it out. I think I just flattened it and flattened my accent a lot. I don't even know if it was that. Ugh. Yeah. I'm just glad that I didn't do law at university. I would have taken it a bit far.
Do you think you would have gone the whole Ally McBeal, like power suit dressing and all that business then if you had done?
Yeah, bought a pinstripe suit like hers for my graduation. and then I think it just kind of fizzled out after that.
Oh, wow. You bought a pinstripe trouser suit for your graduation in the style of Ally McBeal.
Yeah.
Do you still own it? Do you still have photos of it?
I still have photos of it. I even like...
I sense what the premiere outfit might be. I'm sensing
I'm going to hunt that baby down. It must be somewhere. It was like... It was navy blue with like very fine purple pinstripes. Purple pinstripes. And then like this purple vest that I hunted high and low for.
I just love the sartorial dedication. If it's not hunting for the perfect grey t-shirt, it's hunting for the perfect Ally McBeal power trouser suit.
Yeah, but it got worse. I got my hair cut like hers. I got that fringe. You know that, I don't know if you saw it. Like she had this fringe. It's a very short fringe, but hairdresser in my village, like there was only one hairdresser and I don't think she had the same kind of aspirations as I did. And she was a bit confused when I asked for a fringe this short and she basically just like cut across my head at the top. It was like 3 millimeters long.
Wow. Oh my God. That sounds exactly what you're after. It sounds like that's absolutely on the money. I'm looking at all these photos of her haircuts and it's just incredible. I mean, they have not aged well, those haircuts. They dated.
Oh, can you see the one with her like really short fringe? And then there was an episode where she also crimped it. Google Ally McBeal fringe.
Yes, I've just got to the crimped one.
I did that. And that was my like hairstyle for a while.
Well, thankfully it was just a phase. that Ally McBeal obsession. I'm assuming you won't want when we're looking at Don't Make This Weird, I'm assuming you don't want it to be exactly like an Ally McBeal homage when it comes to the genre.
No.
What genre would the film be? And what sort of budget are we looking at?
I love a mashup of genres, like when you like smash them all together. So I'm thinking comedy, social, horror, melodrama.
Lovely.
Because that's what it feels like in my head sometimes.
Comedy, horror, social, melodrama.
Yeah. I'm thinking let's go like indie. I think that's maybe a couple of million. I don't know. I've not made a film yet, but I feel like that's quite cool. And I feel like it'll tone down the weirdness.
Do you think people are forgiving when they know it's an indie film and therefore not made with a lot of money? Do you think they're forgiving of certain rough edges and if things look slightly... Yeah, slightly less polished.
Yeah, if things are weird. Like, indie films are meant to be weird, so I think that's... Yeah, maybe I don't need to tone down the weirdness. I'm just going to go for it. Yeah, really weird.
And why melodrama? Why particularly melodrama? You say an indie comedy, horror, social melodrama. Why melodrama?
One of my first memories is hugging my little sister and screaming, "I don't want you to die." I feel like that's the level of melodrama. That was just a normal afternoon in front of neighbors at home, in front of the gas fire. But I remember screaming at her, and then my mom had to like peel me off. Don't like traumatize your sister. I think I just watched something like I'd found out what dying was. I was like, I don't want her to die. So I thought I'd scream it at her.
Is your younger sister, I think I read, is your younger sister, you said you give £50 to every time you borrow one of her jokes?
Oh, no.
She says something funny.
Yeah, well, she thinks I should give her £50, but I don't. I said I was going to start, but she says like really funny things that I just write down and And then I'm like, oh, that was really funny of me. Like, and then I remember it was her. So really, she wrote Pure.
Oh.
I know. Well,
congrats to her.
She did a good job.
So I'm assuming you're not going to want any of her lines in the film.
No.
Because obviously that would be expensive.
Yeah.
But which parts of your life would definitely have to be in Don't Make This Weird? And why?
Well, it was going to be about writing. And I think, like, well, badminton, it's going to have that, like, first time I played badminton. It's going to have the moment where, like, Pamela Timmons and I came face to face on the court. I think she's the antagonist.
Do you think?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, like, she probably never even thinks about me. And I'm like, Pamela! In my dreams. And she beat me in that game because she was faffing around and playing a psychological game. And I couldn't play the psychological game. I didn't have it in me. So it's going to be a weird mashup of a film, like, with writing and badminton. I think we've got to have more badminton stuff in it, because I always think, like, you know how they make shows about people's hobbies and, yep, like, pottery and dogging and stuff. And
dogging? Do you just say dogging?
People have dogging as a hobby. And
dogging as a hobby, right? Okay, right. Yeah. I see. You started with pottery, and I was like, pottery. Uh huh. Then I thought it was gonna be like baking. Uh huh. Baking, but straight to dogging.
So those shows are interesting to watch, but you couldn't watch one about writers writing, because it would just be them staring in the fridge and being on Twitter. So this is why it's got to be a film about badminton, because you've got all the conflict, the high stakes of winning and losing, and, like, that's why I think, like, a boxing film. I'm always really satisfied when I watch a boxing film, because they're always really terrible at the start, but they've got something. They've got a glint in their eye.
Yeah.
And a really terrible life. I didn't have a terrible life. I had a really happy childhood. But, like, in my head, things were terrible. And then, like, badminton, the sport always saves the person. So I feel like badminton needs to save you. But I feel like, yeah, it's got to have that first badminton match. And then it's got to have me feeling a bit ostracized at badminton tournaments, because we used to play in teams. So I was the Borders team. There was Lothian, there was Glasgow. Glasgow and Lothian were always the ones to beat, because they had all the money poured into it. They had more people. So they were, like, the cool kids. Right. And then they all hung out with each other at, like, individual tournaments. And I was just, like, this lone Borders person eating a banana on my own.
Oh, no.
I know. And, like, I just really struggled, like, speaking to them, because I was so shy.
Were you doing your Ally McBeal American accent? Did that put
it didn't really work on them. No, I feel like I should have whipped that out. Maybe they would have thought I was more interesting. And it's just like that. Oh, I felt like the underdog, because I was from the Borders and had to travel for miles. And I was always so tired, because we had to leave at, like, 6 o'clock in the morning. And the sport, because we had to go to, like, Glasgow or Edinburgh. For these tournaments every Saturday. And, like, that's what I was doing when my friends were probably in Berwick-upon-Tweed going shopping or hanging out on a bench. And I was in a hall, like, playing badminton again.
But the thing is, but you were really good at it. So you should, like, weren't people, did the other kids from, like, Glasgow or Lothian, like, did they not sort of recognise you as you obviously getting better and beating them and all that kind of, you know, that kind of situation? Engage with you?
I think it was quite cliquey. It was looking back, it just sounds so pathetic. Like, it's just so cliquey. And now I would have more confidence to go and, like, to be like, can I join your clique? Because that's how you make friends, isn't it?
And funnily enough, of course, you wrote on Clique, the BBC Three series. So
yes, yeah. Oh, there you go. See, this is what I mean. Like, pouring all my pain into television works.
Is that where the film reaches its climax towards the end? You know, Kristen Wiig playing you as a teenager, winning like tournaments and sort of, like you say, the sport saving her.
I feel like we need to keep it small. So I think it needs to be set in the Borders entirely, because every time I left the Borders, there was more competition. I dominated in the Borders. I was number one. And then, if we want, like, a satisfying trajectory, I think she needs to achieve something and, like, win the Borders Championships. There we go. So that's where it is. And then I think after that, maybe we'll see how taking that competitiveness into her life is actually her demise. And she ends up being a washed up badminton player, traveling across London, every Saturday to play with a bunch of middle-aged men and actually being better than them. But it was just quite a sad. I think that badminton club will go in it. I joined like when I was living in London. I lived there for about 10 years and I was trying to find a hobby and I was like, I'll just go back to my old hobby, badminton. So like the only club I could find, well, there were loads of them, but I think something about it spoke to me and I went to it and it was just loads of men, like middle-aged men. Maybe I've got another thing for older men and I thought they'd compliment my calves again. They did. And it was just me playing with these like middle-aged men every Saturday morning.
Right.
I feel like those are the happiest times of my life. Not really.
4 hours sounds like a lot.
No, I feel like this is going to be a really boring film. So maybe it needs to like include some more stuff. Maybe there needs to be a depressing love story in there.
A depressing love story.
Maybe it's like about me moving to London, trying to maintain my badminton dream.
Yeah.
Realizing I couldn't do it as a career and then just like playing it for like pleasure. And then,
did you like living and being in London, or is that kind of is that the depressing aspect? Is that the like depressing love story? You and London, you guys just didn't get on.
In London, or like I moved. I did like it. It was I loved it, and then well, I hated it at the start. That was yeah. So I went down there with a boyfriend, and then found out he was cheating on me. And then so I feel like at that point where it's like you go through a horrible breakup, and then maybe I found badminton again, and it was my savior. There we go.
Yeah.
I mean, if anyone wrongs me, I just write them in to something as a character and murder them or like do really horrible things to them. And it's really satisfying. It's a way of processing it.
Have you done that to a lot of people? Have you put a lot of people into horrible situations in your scripts?
Yes. And then I forget that it was about them. And then maybe like at the start, I've put like a really distinctive feature about them that couldn't, it's undeniably them. And then I've forgotten that it's them. And then it's on telly. I'm like, oh, shit, they're going to know. Like, sue me. But people don't really notice their flaws on television. If you've like made a character about someone that's terrible, they're not going to go, oh, that person, is that based on me?
Yeah.
It happened, like the first time I remember it happening was like how television made me feel better about my own life was when I was in school and I had a boyfriend, even though like I was 11, and he dumped me because I wouldn't talk to him. I mean, that's like a fairly important point in a relationship, like conversation, like that's, you want at least a conversation out of that. He wasn't getting anything. And we went out for a week and then he dumped me. And then I remember watching Hollyoaks and someone had been dumped and then they got back together with them. And I was like, okay, that happens. Like, it doesn't mean like this is going to be the end of my life. Like things can get better. So I have Hollyoaks to thank for that. Maybe that's where I was like, where I could pour, I realised I could pour all my angst into.
Thank you, Hollyoaks. Did you, hang on, haven't you written for Hollyoaks? No, you haven't.
No, I haven't. No.
You haven't written for Hollyoaks. You've got to pay them back. You've got to pay them back somehow.
I mean, I feel like this is, thank you, Hollyoaks. There you go. that's it.
We've got some of those key parts of your life in the film. Mm-hmm. Which moments would you want on the cutting room floor? Which moments aren't making it into Don't Make This Weird?
I think all the bits of me thinking, overthinking things, because that's pretty boring. If it's going to be about me writing, then all the bits where I procrastinate writing. So I feel like this is a story of badminton and writing. And the boring bits about when I'm writing, me making a cup of tea, taking the bins out and watching my dog have a shit, things like that. I just hate taking the bins out. This is why it's such a big thing in our house. Like, I hate taking the bins out so much.
Because I know in Scotland that you have a variety of bins. You have about four, don't you, generally?
Well, I've written to the council about this because we don't. We've got like all the houses on the night on, like, there's a really nice street, like, just up the road from me, all the big houses. They've got a purple bin where they get to put all their alcohol bottles.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, a purple bin. Whereas we plebs have to take our bottles to the bottle bank. I have to put them in the bottom of the buggy and like put it down the stairs and it clinks. And everyone knows you've got like white bottles in there. It's like rattle, 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 rattle all the way to the bottle bank.
Because then people are judgy. Because if they hear bottles clinking in a buggy, they're like, oh, what a mother. But then imagine, like, it's not like you're dressing up the bottles in baby clothes, trying to hide it and like pretend,
I know.
Like, oh, we're just going out for a walk.
When
there's a bottle of gin in a coat.
Yeah. When you need, that's hiding your drinking. And that's when you've got a problem.
So the bins aren't featuring in here. Is there anything else like from your career that you wouldn't want in the film? Is there anything that you know you'd rather not dwell on?
Maybe like getting sacked from Casualty.
Go on.
I mean, I feel like a lot of people get sacked from Casualty, or when I was working on it, a lot of people got sacked from Casualty. I didn't do anything. This is another thing. I was such a goody two shoes at school and just generally in my life, like being sacked from anything is the worst thing that could happen. I hate failing at things. And I got sacked from it because they didn't like what I'd written.
What had you written?
I don't know. One of my ideas was, well, one of the rejected ideas was, what if, I think this is still a genius idea, what yeah. if there was an accident at a zombie run? You know, like a zombie fun run?
Yeah. Like,
dress up as zombies. And then they've all got to go to Casualty and people are like looking like zombies and like have blood coming out of their necks. And like, you don't know yeah. the patient, you don't know.
Yeah.
There's obviously like a really emotional story being told through the center of that.
I think Kirsty, you, if you presented me with two options, mm-hmm. one is an accident, a zombie run, zombies end up in A&E and no one knows who's injured. Mm-hmm. And it's all mm-hmm. kind of like a bit comedy horror, but with like yeah. an emotional through line, of course.
Yeah.
Or Charlie fucking Fairhead getting shot again.
Oh, Charlie, come on.
I know which one I want to see on my television.
Yeah. Charlie, Casualty has been like this thing in my life. And then getting, like I watched it every Saturday night and it's always like, oh, he's going to die. He's going to get catastrophically injured. Maybe that's why I'm so worried, because I'm like, something bad is going to happen. It's just like Final Destination in my head all the time. And then getting sacked from the show that I loved, I felt like a failure. But then you need some failure in a film, don't you? You need a low point. So I'm thinking like having like that really big breakup or being sacked from Casualty, you need yeah. a low point, because then you yeah. get to come back from it. But if we're talking about like cringeworthy, boring moments that need to be on the cutting room floor, I've just thought of something. Right, I had a crush on this guy. I don't know, why is it people from your past always have like really, like their names just are quite funny. Like I used to have a crush on a guy called Mark Stoddart.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that is, it's a lovely alliteration, isn't it?
Isn't it? Yeah. So, and we always had to, because we were traveling across the borders to get to Glasgow to go to a tournament. I was always really tired and I always had to sit in the middle. And I remember like falling asleep on his shoulder and like dribbling all down, dribbling down his shell suit.
Oh, what an image.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that can probably go there. And then I fancied another guy called Gordon, which is like, that's not a name you give to a child, is it?
It's a very, it does, it, everyone with that name does sound like they're about 37 from the off.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had a teacher mm-hmm. called Gordon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always try and like look up these people to see what they're like now. And I can't find him because I can't remember his surname. But like I Googled this person I fancied at university and he looks like a middle-aged man now. And I'm like, am I middle-aged? Middle-aged, I don't know. He just looked like he worked in an office and he'd worked in an office for quite a long time with not a lot of natural daylight. Quite a sedentary lifestyle. I was like, what's happened to you, Alan? What's happened to you? Oh,
I'm wondering, would Casualty feature as an influence on Don't Make This Weird? Or are there other like TV shows or films or literature or comics or theatre pieces which would influence Don't Make This Weird?
I was thinking, because this is a mashup, so I've just like been thinking about like films, all of those films that could be mashed together to make this film.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, Ally McBeal, Bridesmaids.
I mean, yep.
Meets Eden Lake.
Oh.
Trainspotting.
Oh.
Yeah. Eden Lake is an amazing film. I love it. It's like one of the ones that I wish I'd written, because it's just, I think it's a social horror, because it's about people turning against people and the threat is other people.
Yes.
Oh, have you seen it? It's brilliant. Michael Fassbender as well, which
I had to just, I'd literally just Googled it because I remember there was someone, there's got a good cast in there. Kelly Riley, Jack O'Connell, Thomas Turgoose.
Yeah.
People, it's all about hoodies, isn't it? It's hoodies.
Hoodies. And you think, like these people, you think you've found safety, but actually you've just found your death. And I don't know how this is going to play into Don't Make This Weird, but
yeah.
I think it should.
Is it the kind of the illusion of safety, that kind of atmosphere of like actually where you think you're safe, you're not.
And the threat of rural living, because I'm like small towns. I grew up in a small town, and I feel like this badminton film set in rural Scottish borders.
It's like badminton straw dogs, like straw badminton dogs or something.
I feel like this is turning into a folk horror instead.
Just love the ease with which you said the threat of rural, like it's something that's like constantly on your mind. Like, oh my God.
I think about it a lot. Yeah.
What is so threatening about rural living?
The silence. You don't know what people, well, the silence, yet also the noise, because people know what's happening. Like, I was like, I can't even remember, like, there's a Facebook page for my for my village, and I think it was a few years ago, there was like a post on it saying, has anyone reported the dead badger on the Churnside Road to the county? Because if you haven't, we're going to. And it was like, it was a bit of a threat and a bit of judgment. It's just such a small place that everybody knows your business. Everyone knows everything that everyone has done. And like, apart from the time that there was a milk thief and my dad was trying to solve the crime because milk used to keep getting nicked off people's doorsteps, or like they'd like press the tops in.
Yeah.
And then like the foil tops so that your milk would be like, not great in the morning if it was sunny.
Did your dad crack the case?
It was hoodies.
It wasn't.
Hoodies. It was hoodies. Hoodies from Eyemouth.
Bloody like, hell. Hoodies from the Hellmouth. Hoodies from the Hellmouth.
Eyemouth is the neighbouring village. And hoodies from Eyemouth had come to sabotage the Aiton milk supply. I mean, this is another film.
That is absolutely incredible. Like hoodies invading another village to ruin their calcium intake.
I know. It's kind of dark, isn't it? Like, and also ineffective. Yeah.
It's funny because you mentioned about the dead badger, and I was in the Lake District a few months ago, and I was on a walk with some mates, and we're walking past, you know, we're on a narrow road, and sort of looked at this fence, and there was something on this fence, and I sort of looked, and I got closer. It was a row of dead moles which had been hung along on a line.
Yes.
And like, huh?
I know this. This
what?
This happens in my village.
What, they do public mole executions?
Yeah. Bad moles. What? Digging up the fields. They've got to pay.
The thing is, other moles can't see this. They've got,
I mean,
notoriously bad eyesight.
Yeah,
and they won't be able to go, oh man, look what they've done to Gareth. They've hung, oh no, there's Bobby next to him as well, and there's Maureen. Like I don't understand. It was creepy. Yeah.
It is creepy, isn't it? And then as a child, you see that and think it's a warning. That's the sinister, the threat of rural living. There you go. You go for a nice walk with your mum and dad, and then you see a row of dead moles. And then they're left there for so long, and they bake in the sun, and they slowly become in mole leather.
You fucking what?
Yeah, they just like, they shrivel in the sun because they're just like, yeah, it's horrible. Yeah.
That is grotesque.
People in small villages, man.
Yeah.
I'm one of them. Like,
I tell you what, though, quite tasty. I had a nibble.
People do that, don't they? I watched a program once where it was about foraging, and they made hoisin squirrel and served it in a pub.
What?
I know, it was about getting out of your comfort zone and like looking at the nature around you. And I think it was a grey squirrel. So they're like rats of tree rats, aren't they?
And
you don't want to eat a squirrel like a grey squirrel.
No. Yeah. Don't know where their nuts have been.
Exactly. Literally. Yeah.
Now wondering if the critics love it or hate it, how would that affect you and your next project? Would it affect you?
I feel like it's gonna be a sleeper hit.
Yes, me too.
Maybe like a little bit confused on story by what it is. That's what I'm thinking. But because it's got Kristen Wiig in it, I think that will distract from all the bad things about it. And if critics do pan it, I will do exactly what I do every time they pan something of mine now. I will look them up on Twitter, write them on a list in my phone, and try and find out if they're harboring a secret desire to be a screenwriter and go on their agent's page and then maybe like just wait until they have something on telly just so I can be like, that wasn't very good. And yeah, that's what I'll do. Yeah, just gentle stalking, just slagging them off to everyone, sending WhatsApps to my producers about the wrong they are.
I mean, and this is clearly what you do. And do you have a list? Do you have a shit list?
Yeah. Doesn't everyone have a shit list? Don't they? Do they?
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It just helps. I'm not going to do anything. Although I'm a bit worried if something happens to them in real life, then I might be a suspect. I hate being criticized in like my personal life, on the page, anything. I hate it. It's just, I think that's why my film is called Don't Make It Weird, because I'm trying so hard not to be criticized for being like weird that it just ultimately becomes weird. And I always listen to people when they always say like they don't read critiques and things like that, but I can't help it. It's like I want to be offended.
Right.
And I want that rage. Maybe it's just because I want to like play badminton again. I need like that. Like I've got this really bad habit of like when something's going out, like reading what they say on Twitter.
Oh no, really?
I know it's such a bad thing to do. Like, yeah, but I do have a list on my phone. I think I've deleted it now because I was like, that's not healthy, is it?
Like, do you watch it as it's going out and looking at the hashtag and what people are saying, or do you like? Do you have to see it like in real time as it's happening, or do you kind of wait till the morning, or like?
I try and watch it when it's going out because I feel like by the time it goes out on television, I've seen it so many times, I hate it.
Yeah.
And I need that time between like delivering it and then seeing it on television. It's like seeing it with everyone else. But then also it's like this, the whole day when you're waiting for it to go out, like this fear in your stomach that you've missed something. I've really insulted a huge section of society and I'm going to be like blacklisted or cancelled for something I've written. Probably I'm in the wrong job for someone who doesn't like being criticised.
So where is the premiere of Don't Make This Weird taking place and who's invited?
It's going to be set in the Borders. I think it's going to be set somewhere there, like the Co-op car park in Eyemouth. Or
the premiere of the Co-op car park.
I think we're just going to embrace the weirdness. And maybe the after party is in my old school hall where I played that first badminton match.
Yes.
We're not going to have any nice lights. It's going to be fluorescent lights.
Great.
Just keeping it a bit retro. And who's coming? Callista Flockhart. I feel
Callista.
Like, yeah, because she's the inspiration for the weirdness. Hopefully Kristen will come. And then she can stay at my mum and dad's with me, like in the spare room, obviously, not in my bed, because that'd be weird.
She's quite tall. Is the bed, yeah.
Is she quite tall? She looks tall.
I interviewed her on a red carpet once, and maybe she was in heels, but she was a bit taller than me.
She's got a tall vibe. I love knowing
she has got a tall vibe.
Tall celebrities. I love knowing how tall celebrities are.
Are you good at this? Are you good at a game?
I think I could, if you name a celebrity, I might know their height.
Okay. Lady Gaga.
Lady Gaga, 5'2".
Let's see. 5'1".
Oh, she did a documentary called 5'2".
Oh, of course she did.
I mean, well, hang on a minute. I knew that before that.
There's an article saying Lady Gaga created some confusion when she released her documentary 5'2". Many fans believe this title was a play on her height.
Or the 5'2 diet that people do. 5 days. Yeah, maybe that's it.
If that's all it is. So you love a celebrity height. Who's the tallest celebrity? Who's the tallest celebrity, Kirsty?
Is it going to be someone like Richard Osman? He's like 6'7" or something.
Tallest celebrity.
Maybe 6'8".
In the world.
In the world.
I mean, Shaquille O'Neal is absolutely enormous. 2.16 meters.
Wow.
His shoe size, honestly, they were like sledges, his shoes. It was so insane.
I feel like we'd have a lot to talk about because my feet are massive as well.
Are they?
Yeah. Like once I went into a shoe shop and asked for a pair of shoes in a size 8, which I didn't think was that big. And the shoe, the woman was like, oh, bless. And I was like, bless? That's not actually that big, is it?
An 8.
It's quite deceptively big because I'm not that tall. I'm like 5'6", 5'7", and size 8 feet. They are quite big. I think they look out of proportion.
Did you purchase those shoes or did you decide not to after bless?
I did not. I left.
So who, I'm assuming she's not invited to the premiere. And anyone else not invited to the premiere? And why not if they're not invited?
I'm really sorry, but on my list that I had on my phone, I had people who start podcasts.
Quite right.
I think
quite
it was because during the lockdown, everyone that I used seemed to be starting a podcast. And I was like, maybe I should start a podcast. And then I was like, I can't think of anything to do a podcast about. But I think the hairdresser who cut my hair, who agreed to cut my hair like Ally McBeal.
Yes.
Should go on the list of people who are not invited. Will Smith is not invited either.
Smith, yeah. I think I think he might have had his invitation retracted to a few events. But podcasters, Kirsty, why podcasters? You say because obviously in lockdown everyone started making one or having one or doing one. And if you agreed to come on this one, really pleased that you did. And you're right, because there are too many podcasts these days. There should be 7, this being one of them. But what so frustrated you and frustrates you about podcasters?
It says more about me than the podcasters. It's basically because I am jealous that I don't have a podcast and I don't have I can't think of anything to make a podcast about, because when I was at school, even though I was really shy, I really wanted to be a TV presenter or like a radio presenter, and I used to like get involved in like student media and stuff. So I feel like I should have a podcast because I quite like the sound of my own voice. Especially when I've got like a cold. Yeah, I think it's saying more about me. I'm really competitive because of the badminton thing. And anytime someone achieves something, I'm like, oh, I just have this inner rage and I don't know what to do with the feelings, Toby. What do I do with the feelings? Like when someone gets nominated for a BAFTA and I don't, and things like that. And people win awards, and I want to be happy for them. And I am. But
yeah, I've got, you're like, right.
Professional envy, jealousy, rage. So it's not really podcasters. I feel like it's me not having a podcast that shouldn't be invited.
You could have a podcast, Kirsty. You could make your own podcast.
What would it be about though? Maybe.
I mean, badminton sounds like an easy win. Yeah.
I'm going to call it Don't Make This Weird.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
Copyright. I mean, Swain, 2022.
Is that that competitive energy? Badminton Unleashed that did it.
Yeah, I feel like
do you think you might have been quite a kind of like happy-go-lucky?
Yeah, I might have been quite chilled out, just like quite blasé, but I feel like I take it with me in every single aspect. I can't enjoy anything because I'm trying to like, I don't know, if I watch something good on telly, I'm like, well, I need to write something better than that. Or like, is mine as good as that? Like, it's always like a competitiveness. And even when like I want to go, like maybe I'll go for a run to like chill myself out, but there's another runner near me and I have to like run faster than them up a hill. Like I'm racing them. They don't even know they're being raced. And I'm like trying to race them. It's just very tiring. And I feel like I would be less tired and more chilled out if I hadn't played badminton. But then maybe I wouldn't have, like, I feel like it gives you a drive as well, like a competitiveness. But there's a point at which it will destroy you.
So yeah, I mean, I like running as well. And don't get me, I've done that thing where you want to overtake people, and like you use them to reel yourself in. You know, you reel them in, and you get quicker and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
And
that.
Then you trip over a mooring ring down by the canal and fall. And
have you done that?
Yeah.
Did you fall in the canal?
I didn't fall in the canal. I fell on the canal towpath, and like properly injured myself. And then that person was just like sprinting off into the distance. I was like, see, that's what happens. That's a cautionary tale.
That is that's a great tale. And that's like, that's definitely got to go in the film. I think that's a really good teachable moment. I think, is that the phrase that people talk about these days? And look, and if you're looking for a podcast, couple of ideas, right? Mm-hmm. You could do an Ally McBeal rewatch.
Oh my God, yes. This is a great idea.
Go through the sort of like the cringe moments which no longer work, which kind of clearly show it's dated, all that kind of stuff. Or you could just interview the people who you feel have wronged you over the years, and you can ask them to apologize.
That is an amazing idea. But I hate confrontation.
Do you?
I really hate it. I would do anything to avoid confrontation.
So you're having all these battles in your head.
Yeah.
But you won't actually put them out there.
Yeah. I have these really powerful moments. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to say something. And then I get so nervous about having a conversation. And then most of the time, if I do actually have a conversation, it's absolutely fine. And but I've just like caused so much stress in my head. I'm like, yeah, quite tired after it. Yeah, maybe I should just have more confrontations. This would be really therapeutic for me, I think. I'm going to do this one. I should do things that scare you. That like makes me shit myself. So I could do another podcast that was me competing with people in different things that I'm not very good at. Like, yeah, things I've never done before.
Now there's a one-way ticket to some kind of like mental breakdown, isn't there? Yeah. Like if you're saying like constantly wanting, sort of obsessing over other people doing things better than you.
Yeah.
There's no surer way to wind up in therapy than to do something like that.
Yeah. I mean, my boyfriend is an amazing piano player, but I also played piano when I was a kid, and he's much better than me. And I can say that now. I've made peace with it. But when we first started going out, it really made me angry. And I was like, I can't listen to you. But I feel like that was really awful of me, and I still like that's I made that weird. I could have just let him play a lovely song on the piano, but I was like, you're really yeah, that was a teachable moment as well.
Well, there we have it. Don't Make This Weird, an underdog story of writing and badminton, The Rocky for Millennials, an indie comedy horror social melodrama with tinges of Ally McBeal, Bridesmaids, Eden Lake and Trainspotting, featuring Origami, Being Very Early, 27 grey t-shirts, chest bumping, the fast, quiet violence of badminton, muscular calves, Kristen Wiig with a terrible Scottish accent, dribble on a shell suit, and a thank you to Hollyoaks. Kirsty Swain, congratulations on being greenlit.
Thank you.